Thank you. Not a problem. Sure. Yes. So my name is Frankie, and I teach in an international slash bilingual school in Taiwan. And I teach social studies, primarily history, because social study encompasses a lot, like geography. There's also government. I teach history. My specialization is actually modern world history. I've been teaching at this current school. This is my ninth year. And I teach predominantly in upper levels and senior high. So that would be, we use the American system. So we call it the juniors and the seniors. And their age level would be about 16 to 18. I've worked at in Taiwan. This is my second school, but my first school is a little bit different. It's not really a school. It's called a cram school. It's the supplementary school that students go to after their regular school. It's very popular. It's a very popular institution in Asia. And I found my job while I was working in Korea, an international school there. I found it, I believe, near, it's just a random job search website. I can't really remember. I like the school I work for because there's a lot of flexibility for teachers to do different instruction, try different things, collaborate with different teachers. However, I do have to say that my there's a lot of there's a heavy workload. I'm not sure whether it is a private school or because it is a Taiwanese school. Everybody in Taiwan, if they're teaching, they work long hours because the students stay until 5, 6 p.m. at night. So the students, teachers sometimes stay just as long. My school is a, oh, sorry. Okay, my school is a private school. Oh, sorry, there's a little bit of noise in the back because my roommate was is leaving. Okay, so my school is a private school, and private schools. So in Taiwan, okay, there are two different kinds of schools. One's a public school, one is a private school, and the public schools are pretty straightforward. They do not charge any tuition for the students. It's part of the Taiwan's a recent initiative to incorporate 12 years education as fundamental and free for all. So public school get their funding from government at two different levels, the national government as well as the local city government. And they apply for these fundings on an annual basis. And I believe that for the city, there is a set budget that's allocated to different schools, and then based on the principal and the administration, they allocate that money to be used for regular program. The public school can also apply for a national scholarship, if you will, which is extra funding for extra programs for example, for students in need or for talented and gifted students. And so that's private school. And most of the teachers in private school, they go through the local teaching program. They have to be certified, and there's an entrance exam, exit exam to certify the teachers, and they get they have to renew their license periodically. For the private schools, which is the where my school falls under, the private schools they run a little bit differently. They do not necessarily have to. They cannot apply for budget except if there are special circumstances, in which case they only apply through the national government. But they still have to follow the regulations on curriculum and instructional hours or subjects. They have to still meet the same credit requirements as the government stipulation. And so even though it's a private school, we have a little bit more funding, but we still have to fulfill the Ministry of Education's requirement, which is the bureau that controls the education or oversees the education in Taiwan. And other than that, if they want to do any extra program that after they fulfill the basic requirement, as long as they can get the funding through their boards or through fundraising, through the private donations, then they have a little bit more freedom there. So private school tends to be the favorite choice of this as Taiwanese citizens, because they believe that these extra flexibility allows students to be exposed to other extracurricular programs. And under the private school, we are a different kind of private school because under the private school, there are two different kinds. There's the local private school where they follow the local program, educate students to be tested into the universities of Taiwan. And there's us, which is a bilingual school / international school. And the parents choose to send, most of the parents with enough financial stability would like their students to go to private school. And within that crowd, if the parents have a long-term goal, or if they were educated from abroad themselves, their goal is going to get their kids into a university abroad, in Europe, UK, for example, also United States. And now I think there are several schools in Australia, Japan, and even China. And so those parents will choose to send their kids not only to private school, but to our school. And if in Taiwan, if the school is public, then you don't need to be selected as long as your household registration is within a district. You take the household registration. They must provide a space for you, and that is quite common in our country. However, since that's for public school, in private schools, as long as you have the tuition and as long as you have a transcript from a previous school, no outstanding behavioral issue that was recorded or documented, then the parents and the students can choose whichever school, private school, they can attend. And the private school also has the freedom to say to select and accept or reject students. Yes, the some schools are much better than others. Either in reality, by looking at the curriculum, the professional development provided for teachers, student learning results, or some schools are better than others by hearsay. And when I say hearsay, they just, you know, like from parents to parents to parents, and they talk about a particular school, and they don't really necessarily look at any measurable data, but they just look at the name and they say, oh, I heard so-and-so said that this is a good school. And then they come and they take a visit. Yes. Yes. It means that when a student takes the credential, we call it, to become a teacher, they take an exit exam, and then they do practicum, the way they become student teachers, and after that they get their license. And when they get their license, I believe because I wasn't educated in Taiwan, but I think within the first, I want to say 5 years, considered a new teacher. And within those 5 years, you're obligated, besides teaching, you're obligated to attend certain workshops to update your knowledge. And then after that, I believe that after a time, say 5 years, you have to present the workshop you have attended in order to update your license. And some teachers do not choose that method because that's a lot of time spent. And so what they do is they take like an additional class. And then the additional class is called the induction class. And it's just like, it's the same thing as the workshop. And you take it and then you take the exit exam of that induction course to renew your license. And then eventually, once you renew the license several times, you will get what is called tenure. And tenure basically means that you no longer have to renew your license. Your license is permanent. And it creates, it's an extra stability for your job, because in schools, both public and private, when you have a teacher that has tenure, it's the evaluation process. Sometimes I've heard, not in our school, but in other school, the tenure teachers gets exempt. They don't get evaluated because they are considered permanent teachers. In our school, I don't know about the other schools. I didn't talk to them in length. But in our school, we get evaluated by we get evaluated annually, and we get evaluated through three different means. So the first one is we get evaluated by student survey. So students take surveys about all their subjects, teachers, and that's a source of evidence, although that's not always very reliable. So the second type of evaluation is semester observations. So the first semester we are observed by the academic coordinator of our school, and the second semester is a combination of academic coordinator and or the head teachers of each department, say English department, social studies, science, and math. And then that's the second data we use to evaluate our teachers. And the third one is a collection of, for example, the teacher's attendance record, the teacher's self-reflection of his or her teaching practice for the year, and if there are any records of correspondences, initiatives, conflict resolution that the teacher was involved in. Those records gets sort of accumulated, and we look at the teacher holistically, not just as a teacher in the classroom, but also teacher as a team player within the school, and together this teacher will be evaluated. And then there usually is not a formal evaluation procedure where the teacher sits down with the headmaster or the principal plus the academic coordinator due to time constraint. But I think our school is trying to improve that by actually implementing it, if not for this academic year, for the next one. So, but even without the formal discussion or formal talk, these three evidences are presented to the teacher at the end of the year. And then the teachers then can look at it and comment, invite people to comment or call a meeting. And that's how the teachers get evaluated. Yes. So because we do these evaluations, for example, this especially the first two, the student survey plus the observation once a semester. So after the first semester, if we notice that there's a teacher that seemed to be having issues with a particular class or teaching in general or planning, then what we do is we meet with the teacher, the academic coordinator meet with the teacher, and we ask the teacher we present some evidence to the teacher. We ask the teacher to comment, and perhaps the teacher has a rationale that we can assist the teacher in supporting of his or her needs. Then that's a pretty open and shut case. But if the teachers do not feel that the evaluation is valid, then we continue the meeting with exchanging how the teacher feels about those data. And then if there's no agreement, sometimes the meeting sometimes ends quite negatively. But we rarely had that occasion. Most of the teacher, after we talk to the teacher will say, "Ah, yes, I did notice." And then they start to share with us something that is going on, perhaps that might affect their professional performance. And if that is the case, then we go from there to support the teacher. Sometimes the teacher will actually request extra assistance in particularly like one class, or in particularly instruction in one area, in which case we give the teachers 3 months where the teacher will meet with the academic coordinator and or the senior teacher or the department head of that department on the weekly basis to discuss the concerns of that teacher. And then we call that the program of improvement, and the program of improvement lasts 3 months. And within those 3 months, the teachers meet regularly on the weekly basis, and any data we have from the administrators monitoring, if parents call, if we have any concerns, we communicate to the teachers. And then if the teacher has any concern with students, with teaching, with materials, they will also communicate that through with us on the weekly basis. And after the 3 months, we give a teacher a summary. And the teacher will also then reflect their growth, if there's any, in the past 3 months. And then we decide whether the program improvement was helpful to the teacher, and that's it, that's our in our definition successful. Then the teacher is off the program of improvement, and they're back on track. in a sense, and then or we continue the process, but we might change the way we help the teacher so that the teacher feels it's a little bit more catered to his or her needs. And then sometimes these will be on, it'll be ongoing, so it'll be no longer be the program improvement, but we need to see the teachers make effort to change. And so once the teacher make the effort to change, then usually that is the motivation for the teacher and us to continue hiring the teacher for another 2 years or a year or two. Yeah. Yes. I think in private school we can spend a little bit more time with each teacher based on teacher's need. I believe in public school, what I know is they also have a academic coordinator position, but because the academic coordinator is also involved in other administrative duty instead of devoting strictly to supporting the students. So I believe that the amount of time is probably not that available. So if, say, multiple teachers go to the academic coordinator for assistant, I believe the academic coordinator may not be able to delegate or be able to monitor the process where he or she will have to probably disseminate, ask the senior teacher to help, and the quality of the help the teacher receives, if not carefully monitored, may not be as good. But I believe the same system exists in the public school. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I teach because I said that I teach mostly the senior high students. So, I teach I think this year is a little bit different because I have one IB history class. The class is quite small, and I don't believe that's a really good example to talk about. So I'm going to talk about my class last year. My class last year, I had three different classes, but each subject I teach, one of them I teach actually two classes. So I have a total of four classes. The first subject is Modern War History. I'll use that as an example. The Modern War History class was, there were two groups of students, sophomores in high school. So that would be grade 10, and their age is about 15. And so what I do is I see them five sections a week, and that section means period. And two of those periods are together to form a block. So I see them for two periods, and another two period, another day, and then one period at another day. So I meet them three times a week, and each period is 45 minutes. So together I meet them like for 90 minutes block, and then another 45 minutes. And what I usually do is I try to establish a routine, and my routine usually starts by assigning a pre-reading for over the weekend. And then the next after the weekend, when I see the students, what we do is we deal with the information at hand, and that is usually done through two ways. Most commonly used. The first one is called, we call it the interactive lecture. It's very, very simple. It's not as fancy as its name. It is basically where I have a PowerPoint with just the main points or questions. There could be checking for understanding questions or higher level thinking questions. And what I do is, because the students read and they are asked to take notes, and those notes I actually take in just as a formative assessment. And what I do is I allow them to use those notes, and they can write more throughout the class. And we talk about the material, not me giving them the information, but me looking at the heading and say, okay, so for example, the start of the Cold War, I said, well, who can tell me what started? So they will throw some facts, and together as a class, we organize the facts together, and I highlight an important concept I would like them to know. And then there's a check, there's a question, for example, do you feel that the Cold War could have been avoided? If so, how? And then so that kind of steps out of the textbook, and they get the groups, get the kids thinking. And in order to, I noticed that one of your questions here asked about motivation. I do have to, yeah, I want to talk about how I motivate the student. Unfortunately, for the notes, the motivation is quite, it's more or less of negative reinforcement because I collect them, I give them a grade. It's not a grade for completion. It is not really necessarily a grade for the quality of their notes. It's just the amount of effort. And that is quite subjective, I understand. And most of the students that I teach, they understand that the note skill can be applied to other subjects, or they completely think it's a waste of their time, but it's reflective in their note, in their grade, as well as their class performance. And in my class, I actually give them a class participation grade. So if I see a student who has never raised his or never contributed to the class, if I notice it, that's continuously for 2 weeks, I might talk to the student and say, are you okay? Do you need any help? And eventually it will reflect in their participation grade, and I probably will document it. We have an online platform to document student teachers' concern for students, and the parents get to see it. And so those are negative, sorry. But I do have a positive reinforcement for my student. I put my students in groups of four or five. And so what I do is when I do these interactive lectures, I divide them into their groups. And for younger age, even in grade 10, you'd be surprised, 14, 15 years old, they like to be in the group and they like to pick a group name. And for every contribution they make to the class discussion, I do a very simple 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 tally. And at the end of the 90 minutes, the group with the highest points, what they have is they have a free homework pass. So what I do is I tell them, since you have done so well that this weekend when I assign the next section, your group don't have to do it because you have done such a good job in your notes that I think you can try just reading it and trying to retain the information. And the kids really like it because that's like one less thing they have to do. But what I find really interesting is that positive motivation kind of disappears, because then the same group of kids the next week, in order to be able to participate, sometimes they still take notes, even though I don't ask them to. And I switch up the groups every 2 weeks so that the kids can work with other teammates. So that's my form of positive. And then that's the first 2 weeks. And then the second block, we usually work on more individual or writing based. So I usually let the kids, I have a prompt that may be a summary or a thought question for the lessons that we have, and they work on it, and I walk around and assist them individually. And that is also the time where if I feel I need to talk to individual students about their performance, what I notice about them, their lack of motivation, their sleeping in class, and I usually take that time. And usually those kids are much more responsive when I take them and just go to a private corner, very quietly talk to them. And then the other kids are just working on their own. And sometimes these writings are done in groups. Sometimes we use technology where they share the Google Doc and everybody contributes and they comment on each other. So that's what we usually do. And sometimes some of that time is given to activities. And then, so the activity can run from the second time I meet the kids to the last 45 minutes. So the activity is usually a simulation or a summative, small, quick project. And the example I can give you is one of the first lessons I cover in modern world history is we began in 1700s with Industrial Revolution. So one of the things I assess the students for that week is I would like you to look at one of the inventions of the Industrial Revolution, do a little bit of research, and then come to class and do a very small poster where it can be done in class. And my requirement is basically a slogan about the invention, the history of it, which is drawn from Industrial Revolution, and its evolution to modern, like what modern technology is it related to. And they come to class with a visual prepare. So they print out some visual, but then the writing information part is done in class. And then at the end, that's what they have, that I assess them based on the amount of information, how they present it, and then they get that's how we do the last class. When the chapter is over, then there is obviously a summative quiz that is usually given in the form of a multiple choice or an essay that they write. So that's how I usually do my class. And I would probably say that my students, okay, they have a certain degree of autonomous state, because in the three classes, when they're doing group work, I allow a little bit more freedom. For example, when they're doing individual writing, I allow them to put on the headphones because I know they like to listen to music. It helps them. And if they put on headphones, I find that it minimizes their chatting. So I allow them to do that. And yes. And so, yes, I find that very helpful. And then, and for the another way I allow students to be a little bit more independent is when I ask them to do a project that that is small, and some students will say, can I work alone? Or can I work in group of three? Can I work in group of two? As long as I know I can assess each student, even if they're working in a group, and where they delegate their jobs, then I allow the autonomy for them to decide what it is that they want to do. However, I do interject when I find that there are two students or three that always work together. Then I would say, could I ask you to pick someone else? And that is when I chime in. I do encourage teamwork because I encourage teamwork through the group getting the points in interactive lecture. And I encourage, I'm very big on helping one another. So in a group, when I have a very strong student that keeps raising his or her hand to answer all my questions, to contribute, I sometimes will be very direct and say, okay, this group, excellent job, but I need you to not take over. Steal people's thunder, and I would like other people to participate. And what I find is that the person who always speaks out, he or she will quietly point to the section of the notes or tell someone else who's usually quiet or off task where he or she can find the answer, and then help them to raise their hand. It doesn't always happen, but once in a while, like one out of five, that would happen. And that helps to build confidence in the less outspoken student in the class. So teamwork does help. Of course, during reviews, I divide them into teams, and the winning team gets very small rewards, crackers, candies, whatnot. So I do encourage teamwork. I would probably say that my style of teaching is a combination of group work plus lecture and differentiated instruction. That happens when the students are working alone. When I notice that a certain student is struggling in writing, I would sit down and I would spend a little bit more time, or I would get someone to sit next to him or her and say, you're really good at writing a thesis. Could I ask you to talk to the student about how you do it? And then I make another round and I come back and I ask the student, can I ask what he or she told you, and does it work for you? So I follow up on that. I have to be honest with you, I don't really use flipped classroom. The reason being that our school actually held a flipped classroom conference last year, where we invited other schools around Taiwan, and it was really successful. And a lot of our teachers were trying it at the same time. And what I found was I had students who came to my class and just say, I said, what do you guys think about the flipped classroom? And they said, oh my God, can you please not do it? Because we now go home and we have to watch 3 hours of 3 hours on three different videos. Why can't you just do it? So I think the concept the idea is great, but I think flipped classroom, like any teaching idea, could be kind of overused in its initial stage. And once it's overused, I think the students lose the interest, or they lose the spark. So I tell my student, my flipped classroom is that, I assign your reading, but I still feel that the teacher-student, like one-on-one, personal interaction is very important. Because sometimes, when I teach history is a really boring subject. I admit it to my kids. So what I do is I try to give them anecdotes, jokes. I even tell them as a student, how I memorize certain historical facts. And they will laugh because it's the silliest way I did it. But it's something that will stick. And so I believe that is more effective than flipped classroom. And so that's how I would characterize my classroom. And let me see. How do I get my classroom? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, that's one of the things I try to tell my other teachers when they ask me what it is I do with team group work. I said one of the success half of the success of the group work is that your instruction must be very clear. And so there are actually several steps I take to assure that the team knows what it is that they have to do. So there's instruction that tells the students what is the activity. What is the goal? What is the academic goal? What are extra skills? And then what it is and what exactly do I want at the end? So I want, for example, five key facts, or I want a visual in the center. I want a slogan. I want a three-paragraph essay produced. And then what else I do is usually when I am in a group, I would assign I call it the go-to person, not necessarily a leader, but a go-to person. And I tell them, you are the timekeeper, you are the one person that has to delegate and step out of the group work and look at what everybody's doing to make sure that everybody is contributing, no one is overshadowing. And so it helps me when I go to a group, I don't just look at, sometimes I look at the group and I say, what are you guys doing? But sometimes when I'm in the middle of talking, I need to talk to a student, but I talk to the students in a way where the student's back is to the class, so the student doesn't feel like everybody's watching the student. I am facing the student, but in the back of the student, there's the whole class. So sometimes I will stop the students and then I will say, excuse me, hold on a second. And instead of physically walking to the group that I feel is off tap, I will just call that go-to person and say, Johnny, can you tell me what is going on right there? And then sometimes just by doing that, I don't even have to tell them what it is that I'm seeing. They'll just be like, oh my God, got it. So they will just be on task. They will try to go back on task. Yes. Oh, thank you. Well, I believe that most of the technique I learned, I learned it through actually just trial and error. And I think the one thing I do have to say is that in Taiwan, every year there is a professional development that is. I forgot what I think it's called Teaching in English Association. It's abbreviated as TEA. And what they do is they invite overseas, like American or European or other Asian countries, educators to come and talk to us. And that is like a full weekend workshop. I find those workshops very successful because they help with instruction and they play it out in the classroom by making the teachers play out the different students' role, and they talk about how to overcome certain difficult students, certain difficult classroom atmosphere and whatnot. In our school, the professional development is very important, to the point where each academic year, a teacher is given around $600 for any professional development he or she wants to go on. All they have to do is apply. And so, yeah, that took many years for us to get there, but that is something that is an obvious message to the teacher that we do want them to better themselves. And that means the teacher can literally find something every year. Now, do the teachers do that? Not really. For me, for example, the most of the professional development I go to is because the school wants me to do it. For example, the last one I did is to get certified I don't even know that certification, but I had to get certification to teach IB diploma program because I grew up in the United States. I'm used to the American system, but our schools introduced the IBDP 2 years ago, and I was part of the first year cohort that's taught IB history. So my PD money was spent on getting online training for that. And so professional development is it's motivated or encouraged through that method. And in our own school, we actually designate once every 2 weeks for professional development. But what we don't really invite a lot of outside speaker. What we encourage is actually within the department or cross department for teachers to come and share their ideas. Unfortunately, I have to admit that this is one area where my own department, the social study department, we don't really actively seek out other teachers. But within our own department, we definitely talk about the activities that we do. Even without the departmental professional development meeting time, we share most of our activity with each other because our classrooms are right next to each other. Most of our teachers. Actually, every single one of our teachers that teaches a subject gets his or her own classroom. So we usually just walk across the hall and talk to the teacher who probably will teach the same grade as us, and then say, "Hey, you know what? I'm trying this next week. Do you wanna?" And our schedule is not that flexible where they can come in and watch. But I could just say, can I just drop it off at the Google Drive? Because we all have a Google Drive for each grade. And everybody throws all the resources on there, including PowerPoint, handouts, project ideas. And then so everybody and anybody can grab it. I actually have many teachers who came and said, "Hey, I grabbed this off the Google Drive. Can you explain to me why you type out an entire sheet of paper on the instruction?" And that's where I communicate with the teacher how important it is to set up the activity. And then the teacher's like, "Oh, okay, okay." And then the teachers will come back and say, "Oh, you're right. You know what? I didn't do what you did." And then, my God, like the students were like, they were not on task. They didn't know what to do. And the end result came out to be very different. And I said, "Well, that's okay." And then we talk about it. So within the department, we're really good. But across the department, we are very weak. Yeah. I think for the public schools in Taiwan, they do have department meetings, and I don't know how often it is, but I want to say at least as often as we do every other week. And then they do have a whole school meeting, and we have that less because we have over, in our own school alone, the international section, we have over 90 foreign staff. So getting everybody together is quite difficult. Yeah. But public school has like all teachers meeting and then like 1 week and then departmental meeting 1 week. But I don't know if they change idea. I think they do. I was told that at the public school, the teachers meeting are more about, for example, like setting the tests and also we do that too. But setting the tests and talking about like difficulties with certain problem students. Like I heard that they talk about that a little bit more. Yes. No, not at all. Not at all. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.